The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Gene?
Hey, Chris.
Oh, Gene, hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
All right, so how is the weather out there in L.A.?
Right now, it's beautiful, actually. As a matter of fact, because I've been doing interviews all day in my kitchen, I'm going to walk out to my pool area right now with you.
Wish I was there.
It's beautiful outside. Yeah, right now it's got to be about 86, 87 right now. By the way, where are you?
I'm in New York.
Oh, okay. A little difference in weather right now. I grew up in Connecticut, so growing up in Connecticut, I know your weather very well.
Yeah, and we've got this weird back and forth thing, so now we've got a cold snap. It actually snowed a little this morning.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, the snow on the ground, huh?
Well, not on the ground, but it was like tiny little flurries. I'm like, what is this? Snowing, really?
Man, you want to hear something crazy? I'm out, I think it was last week, hanging out in the house, and my wife and I, the daughters, were downstairs just talking, laughing, drinking, whatever.
Right.
And then I got these French doors in my kitchen. They had the doors open, and it's pouring rain, you know. We're looking at it. It's cool. It's beating in our pool. And all of a sudden, I look at the rain and go, holy crap, massive hail. And evidently, we had this really quick cold snap that just flew in, flew out. And we look in a place called Redondo Beach, which is right outside of Malibu. Basically, the beach was covered with snow. We're like, what?
Wow. That's going to be freaky for LA.
It's like being in the middle of like February and it's 99 degrees in New York City. You know, you'd be like, what?
World's coming to an end. What are you going to do?
Exactly.
All right. So if you're ready, we can get rolling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema and music. Tonight we talk speed metal, religion, and more with Shred Maestro Chris and Paul Perry, only here on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio.
For music and film that matter, cult, underground, independent, generally falling outside the mainstream corporate boardroom paint-by-numbers bullshit. Working alongside Rainbow, MSG, and Alcatraz frontman Graham Bonnet, he blazed his way onto the 80s metal scene with a somewhat uncharacteristic stand in line, making enough of a name for himself to release his own REH instructional video, Speed Soloing, before seemingly vanishing from the scene thereafter. After spending a full 2 decades producing quality, effectively Christian metal albums solely available as imports from the RCA Victor Japan label, with original vocalist Rob Rock from Angelica and Mars Project Driver, and Chastain Fifth Angel drummer Ken Mary, he's returned since to domestic shores courtesy of Frontiers Records. With the blazing new album evoking the sound and style of classic 80s LA-style metal and some blazing sweet-picked arpeggiation and fiery 30-second note runs, still marked by a strong grounding in melodic structure and classic strong construction, Impellitory appears to be poised as their first U.S. breakthrough in decades and their first domestic release with longtime vocalist Rock in the driver's seat. Join us tonight as we speak with one of the great shredders, legendary Chris Impellitory, only here on Third Eye Cinema. And for those of you whose last experience of the man was 1988's Stand in Line, here's a taste of what you missed out on during the 90s and beyond. This is Chris and longtime vocalist Rob Rock joining me and pointing out that we own the night.
The sun is falling and the moon.
Glass Cinema with our special guest tonight, Kristen Pelletieri.
From Ring of Fire. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Lambal from Edenbridge, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Alex Talopoli from Rhapsody of Fire, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy!
Hi, everybody out there. This is Michael Kiska speaking, singing for Unisonic in Plasma Dome, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Kiki from Channel Blue, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Okay, let me know when you're ready. Hey, Metalheads, Leather Leone here from Chastain, and as you know, we're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Enjoy.
Okay. Hi, this is Chris Impelletieri from the band Impelletieri, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Davey Vane from Vane. I want you to get very close to your speakers right now, right up against your speakers, because you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, man, this is Jack Slaughter from Skull Fist, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema!
I just got way too excited. I just kept getting more and more. Couldn't help it, man. Oh, sorry. I can try that again if you want. Okay.
Hey, guys, man. This is Jackie Slaughter of Skull Fist, and I just wanted to tell you that you're listening to Third Eye Cinema! Yeah!
It's you.
I just have this bipolar thing going on. I don't understand why I get so loud.
Hi, this is James Murphy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Rick Ross from Massacre, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Steve Jetto Souza from Hatred, and probably a bunch of other million thrash bands that you've heard of in the past. Anyway, you are listening to Third Eye Cinema with the G-Man, so turn it up and start a pit in your living room.
Awesome.
What's up, everybody? This is Meb from Exhumer, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep it locked, the thrash dial.
Awesome.
This is Tony Patel from Whiplash, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Okay. Here you start out.
Hi, this is Mirai from Psy, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Dr. McCannibal from Psy. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
This is Sam Rosenthal of Black Tape for a Blue Girl, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hello, I'm Sonia Scarlett. I'm the singer of Teatro de Vampire, and you are listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is Homer Simpson. Why don't you do yourself a favor and check out the new Eden Spirit album? It's called Symphony of Sin. I love it, especially when they give away free donuts.
I'll do your normal one if you want.
Sure, go ahead.
Hi, this is Paul Logue from the band Eden's Curse, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Keep rocking. Stay cursed.
Third Eye Cinema.
Right.
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is Lee Christine from Leave Size, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Rock on. Okay?
Hi, everyone. This is Nolan from Kryptos. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Was that good? Hi, everyone. This is Nolan Lewis from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, guys. This is Rohit here from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye. Okay, I'll say that again. Hi, this is Roy from Kryptos, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Yeah. Melon. Yeah, and all that cliche stuff.
Ahoy there, shipmates. This is Chris from Hailstorm, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema. Yar.
Well,
I hate myself.
Hi, this is Udo Doxana, singer of UDO, and you listen to the show Third Eye Cinema.
Tonight, we're talking music, and we have with us one of the premier, not to mention veteran, shredders in metal. Coming to instant attention with the release of his first, somewhat uncharacteristic, full-length Stand in Line, he was quickly tapped to produce a guitar instructional video for REH called Speed Soloing, before seemingly vanishing from the scene thereafter. After spending a full 2 decades producing quality albums available as imports from the RCA Victor Japan label, generally with the same singer and some long-standing members occupying the bass and drum chairs throughout, he's returned to Western Shores, courtesy of Frontiers Records, for the new album Venom. Ladies and gentlemen, may I present one of the true legends in shred, Speed Maestro, Chris Impalateri. Chris, welcome to Third Eye Cinema.
Gene, thank you very much, and I greatly appreciate you having me on your show.
So here's one I bet you don't hear often. Tell us about your personal beliefs, because I don't think it'll be any surprise to veterans of your 90s era that you've been fairly upfront as being a Christian believer, which is not something you hear very often in the field of metal.
Well, I got to be honest. I mean, that's been blown a little bit out of context, taken out of context. I grew up in a Catholic family. I grew up in an Italian home. And so, you know, I've always had a belief in God, absolutely. But I'm not a Christian metal band. I never have been. And for some reason, that got started. And again, I don't want to dismiss that because, you know, people that are Christians are really passionate. I know our singer, Rob Rock's totally devout Christian.
Exactly, right.
You know, it's great. But Impalateri, the band, is not a Christian band. We've never been a Christian band. You know, I mean, so it scares me a little bit because I have no problem with it, trying to label it, but, you know, I don't want to offend someone because, you know, you're going to hear profanity occasionally on our record, you know, and it's aggressive metal. So that's basically it. I mean, that's the truth.
Coming from an Italian Catholic background myself, it's just like for many years you've been working with, like you said, Rob Rock, who worked with Angelica. I think he also worked with Ken Tamplin of Shout. You had Fifth Angel Chastain drummer Ken Mary in the band, who obviously was. And you also do the Animetal USA project with Obsession Loudness, Yngwie Malmsteen vocalist Mike Vasira, who put out albums like The Altar and Sign of Things to Come, which were all kind of out there and pretty open about this. So you sort of surrounded yourself with believers.
Yeah, but it was always funny, though. If you look at our band, I mean, look, Glenn's after Ken Mary, who had played with Alice Cooper, we got Glenn Sobel in the band. And Glenn, you know, was the drummer for, gosh, what, 7 records or something like that?
Right.
And Glenn was Jewish. I'm like, yeah, okay, right. You know what I mean? I used to laugh about it. But I also thought, oh, this is cool, too. You know, at least they're embracing us, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought there's really cool stuff there. Because, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, we're a heavy metal band. And, you know, when it comes to lyrics and the story behind the song, it got really old in the 80s and 90s when bands were just writing about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. It's like boring. I've heard this over and over again. It's part of what killed 80s rock when bands just took the sex thing too far. It just became stupid, you know? But yet guys like us and Rob, man, he's taking stories out of the Bible, which are just, they're badass. They're cool. They're scary. End of the world stuff, you know? And I mean, you talk about, you want to write something that's going to scare shit out of Marilyn Manson, listen to some of that stuff, you know? I mean, it's just, it's great stuff. So I embraced it. I thought, this is great.
Yeah, and it's not something you hear very often, especially nowadays with the prevalence of black and pagan metal. You know, a good portion of the metal community is at least unconcerned with that sort of thing. It's not actively hostile towards it. So anytime you hear it, it really stands out.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing about it, they can be hostile to it, and it can be like a death metal band, and, you know, they do the Satan thing. So I'll say, good, then we'll be the band of good. And always remember, good always kicks evil's ass in the end. So we win. End of story.
Now, there's a strange dichotomy about Impalateri, the band, in that most stateside audiences think of the Graham Bonnet-led iteration, but you've really spent most of your career, both before and after the 2 Bonnet albums, with Rob Rock on vocals. So what led to bringing Graham on board for Stand in Line?
Well, to do that, I have to give you a little bit of history, so I might as well just do that. All right, so let me start. First of all, Impalateri started as borderline a thrash band, Iron Maiden on steroids, insane guitar soloing, screaming vocals like Priest. That's the first record we released. It's called the Impalateri Black EP. And yes, folks, we called it the Black EP long before Metallica called it the Black Album. We released in 86, right? So that record, it blew up. It became this huge cult following record. And, you know, we were playing live and we were drawing big audiences in LA and, you know, in different places. And it built the band. It got a really good vibe. Kerrang magazine in Europe, you know, they loved it. Just great reviews. And it was really a record we did. We had no money. We were poor. We had about $500. So we begged, borrowed, and stealed, you know, studio time, and basically recorded it, again, kind of like as a live record. And we did it over a few days. It just built the band. Something magical happened, and we were embraced. Then Rob decides that just to follow his heart, he wanted to play with this band in Germany. There were some, I think they were a Christian rock band or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, we're blowing up and you want to do this. And I'm like, okay. And I can't stop him. I mean, I have to let him follow his heart. So he did that. And, you know, I think now he's openly admits that that was a mistake. At that point, I had signed a deal with Sony Music. Sony and Relativity was one of the labels they owned.
Right.
And they signed me. They signed a guy named Joe Satriani, who by now most people know as musicians. They signed Steve I. Problem was, I was a band. I didn't want to be an instrumental artist. I love being in a band, you know, like Van Halen. So basically, we basically signed the deal. And when I was a kid, when I first came to L.A., this is pre the Impellitteri Black EP, I was giving guitar lessons.
Right.
And there was a band that Graham Bonnet was in called Alcatraz, and they had Yngwie Malmsteen in it. Well, they were fighting with Yngwie, and they were going to fire him.
Right.
And so basically, they came to my apartment that I was giving guitar lessons at, heard me play, and said, my God, would you be interested in trying out for a band? You'd be perfect. And so obviously, I was playing fast and speed stuff long before I ever heard of Yngwie, because I always get, for some reason, people always go, he's an Yngwie clone. And I'm thinking, I don't sound anything like him. And I love Yngwie, but I don't sound. And so ultimately, I went down to the audition. They brought me and another guitar player named Steve I. Well, you guess who got the gig? To be honest, I was much too young for their band. They were way older than me. I was too immature. So anyways, but I stayed in contact with Graham. We just developed a good, friendly relationship. So when I was done, you know, Impellitteri, we came off with this great speed metal thrash kind of record. And I needed to find someone quickly to do a record because Sony wanted it. It was in contract. So, oh my God, what am I going to do? And I don't know if I guess I called Graham. I said, Graham, I said, you want to do a record? And we'll do more of a tribute to what you've done. It's not going to be real an Impellitteri record. It'll be more like, you know, what you did with Rainbow or Alcatraz.
Right.
So basically, he said, absolutely. You know, he had disbanded Alcatraz. And doing that record, it wasn't, to be honest, it really was not an Impellitteri record.
Yeah.
It didn't sound like an Impellitteri record to me. You know, as a matter of fact, I think Graham's the best thing on the record. I think he sounds amazing on it. I like the song Stand in Line. I mean, it's got one of the most technical, fastest guitar solos I've ever played in my life. It's brutal to play that. But, you know, it was not a record that it was really something that I liked. But either way, you know, we ended up doing a music video and all of a sudden it blew up and MTV were playing it. And they were like, dude, we want you to be, you know, like a host or guest host or whatever they call it on Headbangers Ball.
Right.
You know, so they brought me out and all of a sudden, you know, the video, it smashed. They had a TV show called Smash or Trash. You definitely didn't want to trash, thank God.
Yeah.
So we smashed. Everybody loved it. And, you know, it was played for a while, but it got us so much attention and something happened. Something happened in Japan.
Right.
It used to be for years, people used to joke saying, hey, you can't be popping in America, go to Japan.
Japan, right.
Yeah, but the truth is, that's just not true. Yeah, a little band in America that can't make it, they might go over in Japan and last for a couple months, and they're going to play very small clubs over there and feel like they're rock stars, but they're not selling big records. They're not playing arenas. We went over there. First show we did was Tokyo Dome, 65,000 people.
Wow.
And we started all of a sudden, and I couldn't figure out why. I'm thinking, you know, this isn't an honest record. It's not something I'm really standing behind, right? But I think it was the fact that a lot of those metal kids in Japan had heard the Impellitteri Black EP, plus Graham Bonnet they loved.
Right.
And they seemed to love my guitar solo. So I think a lot of it had to, I call it the success by association. Because Graham back then, people don't realize, back in the 70s and 80s, now Graham's much older than me, but in the 70s and 80s, Graham was huge. I mean, he was one of the first artists. When he was in Rainbow, they headlined, today they call it the Download Festival. Back then it was called Castle Donington. You know, with bands like Judas Priest and Maiden opening, AC/DC opening for him,
yep.
You know, in Rainbow. Massive. So in Japan, Graham was my singer. He was in my band. I wasn't in his band. You know what I mean?
Right.
He was a member, equal member, right? But he was in Impellitteri. And because he had been in bands with Yngwie, Richie Blackmore,
right.
Michael Schenker,
right.
Now Steve Vai, I think people just thought, my God, if he's playing with Impellitteri, this must be a guitar hero. And for some reason, I was openly just embraced immediately. Now, I did work really hard to master my craft, right, as a guitarist.
Right.
I still do, to this day, I play 5 hours a day constantly, trying to always improve and better myself. But whatever happened, it just blew up. And so the record, we went through the whole cycle. We did the tours. It was great, and you know, but Graham was having problems. He was having, you know, he was drinking heavily, and had some family issues, right? And, you know, my heart was broken. I wanted to play with Rob again, you know, and I wanted to go back to just being metal like we started. So basically, you know, I disbanded Impellitteri for a short period of time, did a project with a guy named Glenn Hughes. We just did a bunch of demos. It was going to be on Warner Brothers, but nothing ever evolved. So we stopped, and I basically went back to Impellitteri, thank God. Rob was open. He's like, he wants back in. And from 1992... we just went at it, you know, and we just started making great metal records. And we were really only focusing on Japan and certain parts of Europe, you know, and we were selling so many records. I mean, we did a record called Answer the Master. First day of sales, I think in the first 5 hours, we probably sold close to 100,000 records. Big arena tours and stuff and, you know, covers of guitar magazines and all that stuff. And they embraced us. So we decided just to focus on Japan and certain parts of Europe, because by this time, the metal scene had died out. The shred thing totally died out. It was really more about grunge and, you know, stuff like that, rap rock. So we figured, you know, we're not going to be big here anyway. So let's just focus on those markets where we are. That way we don't allow imports to go back into Japan and kill our record sales. So we did that. And then something happened where, I guess, I don't know, fans around the world started buying our imports.
Yeah, that was one of them.
Dude, and I owe you an apology. I'm so sorry, because they were expensive for people, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Paying $40 of whatever they were paying, I felt horrible. But they started spreading the word, and the band kept getting more and more demand, which kind of comes up to this point in time. You know, we did this record, and it turned out so amazing. We were like, my God, we got a tour. We got to do everything with this record that we can do. And so we went to the labels in Europe, and virtually every major label that specializes in rock music offered us a record deal with this record. They heard it. They were like, my God, this is good. And we were like, wow, great, we're onto something. And then a friend of mine told me about Frontiers and Serafino. I said, oh, great, he's really passionate about this music. His label is, they signed Whitesnake, they signed Journey. They're really building into a major presence. And so I contacted Serafino. I said, Serafino, you know, I'd like to talk to you about this, you know. I had everybody say to contact. He goes, Chris, he goes, yeah, I'm interested, but let me hear it first. Send me some songs. He responded immediately. He goes, I want this. And I knew just by his passion, I said he'd be the good guy to do this, the right label, right business partner. So we agreed to do it, and we agreed to sign for United States and North America and South America and everywhere. So this record is going to be released all over the world. And, you know, like I said earlier, we're shooting 5 major music videos tomorrow with John Logsdon, who did Def Leppard. So we're going to do a big effort on this record, to tour behind it, to promote it, to do everything.
Well, you've given one hell of an overview there, because I'm going to jump back now and cover some of that stuff as we go. What I was going to say is, and I think you kind of answered that, is like, were you deliberately gearing that Stand in Line album towards Graham? Because I want to know how much he was steering the direction of that, because it's like nothing else in your catalog.
Absolutely. I was absolutely listening to Rainbow. I really didn't listen to much Alcatraz. It was really more Rainbow for some reason. It was the Down to Earth record. You know, listen to a lot of that stuff and just kind of let that kind of, you know, kind of fit whatever we were writing. And, you know, it was really, I think, more of a tribute of that era of music, you know. And so it was absolutely towards that. And I think Graham kills it. He sounds amazing on every song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's a really unique talent. He's such an underrated singer. You know, I mean, when he sings, and I've worked with a lot of great singers, Graham Bonnet is by far the most powerful. When he sings, if you've ever been to a zoo and you hear a lion roar, it can be scary. Seriously, it's that loud. That's what he sounds like. You're like, my God, how does that come out of a human being? It's that powerful. And when he goes up in his head voice really high, where a lot of people start to sound like they sucked helium in a balloon and do that really thin high voice, mm-hmm. Graham gets up there and it's still the real voice. And you're like, that's not even human. How are you doing that?
So what happened with Relativity? Because they put out your first 2 releases, but they were more of like a thrash death metal label. They had albums from Exodus, Nuclear Assault, Death, Bolt Thrower, Napalm Death, and then they folded around 92. So what was going on there?
I think what happened was the owner sold the company, and eventually, believe it or not, they got into rap. I think they signed like NWA or whatever.
Wow.
You know, and to be honest, I don't know what happened. I can't blame the label. I think we were lost as a band. I think during that period of time, we just didn't know who we wanted to be, what we wanted to do. You know, I was a kid. I just didn't understand. You know, it wasn't until I figured out that, dude, stop being an idiot. Do what you started. That was Impellitteri, the Black EP, songs like Lost in the Rain. You know, for kids that have never heard us back then, like I say, YouTube the song and you'll hear it. You'll hear what you hear now in Venom. It's kind of like that's really our sound. High energy metal, having a blast, having fun. It's really exciting. Once we figured out that's what we need to be doing, that's all of a sudden where the success really started coming in overseas, big time.
So what kept you going throughout the 90s? Not only your albums, but any remaining support for metal per se. It appears to be relegated to totally just Europe and Japan, which is where all your post-Thin Line albums were released on Victor as Japanese-only imports. As far as I can tell, Venom is the first one that's getting released outside that territory. I think you still are released under Victor in Japan for this one.
Yeah, we are. And we did release Wicked Maiden in Europe. We released System X on SPV in Europe and Crunch as well.
Oh, okay.
So those were European releases. Yes, those went out, but not the United States. And it's funny because I live here in California, right? I'm in Malibu, and I'm like, dude, can we ever release our records and tour here again? So, you know, anyways, but that's where we are now.
And another interesting thing about the 90s period is what we had mentioned before, which is this whole thing about moving into this rather openly Christian lyrical orientation albums like Answer the Master, Feel for the Fire, Screaming Symphony, Eye of the Hurricane. So was this all Rob, or where was this coming from?
Well, first of all, at that time, I was definitely, you know, going to church and studying Christianity to see if it was something for me. I embraced it. I was like, absolutely, because I thought about this. You know, in the 80s, I'm coming out of this era where it went from good Van Halen, Ozzy, to bands like Poison and then Tough and all these hair bands. You know, we were never a hair band. We were more of a thrash band. And even when we did Stand in Line, we were more like, you know, whatever, a European rock band. You know what I mean? So the sex, drugs, and rock and roll lyric, albeit I guess at one time they were cool, it got so lame and old. And then we started listening to a lot of these bands writing more like heavier death metal stuff, right? All Satanism. And we were like, screw that, dude, man. Why don't we write more biblical stuff? Because that stuff is badass. I mean, they've made great movies out of that stuff. You talk about that. I mean, seriously, you want to go on a journey that can just like, well, whoa, dude, that's really cool or frightening or whatever. That's really cool stuff. So Rob started writing in that context. Now, not all our records are like that. I mean, Rob would still, he'd go to watch a horror movie and he'd say, dude, that's cool. We got to write about that, you know? But it had overtones of that. And I thought it was cool, you know, because then at least, you know, you have good and evil.
Yeah. And I understand that Rob had left for a while there to pursue a solo career. Is that why Ken left as well?
No. Right? I think it was around 2000, right? We had done Crunch, which I love. That's one of my favorite records. And Rob wanted to do a solo record. He actually wanted to do a Christian, more Christian bass. And I was like, that's cool. And then I heard the demos and went, dude, that's rock. That's heavy rock. It sounds like us in a way. When you're hiring all these guitar players that kind of play like me, you know? And I'm like, doesn't that sound like Impellitteri? And I said, well, dude, if you're going to do this, maybe I should do an Impellitteri record. But I said, dude, I have a problem. If I do a solo record, what am I going to call the project, the band? It's probably going to be Impellitteri. So I said, you know what? Let me do this. And I called Graham. I always wanted to bring Graham back in to do what I should have always done with him, an Impellitteri record, not a Rainbow record. And hence, that's where we do System X,
right?
And System X, you can hear it from the opening gate. Graham and I were writing that record, and all of a sudden 9/11 happens, and we're just mortified. So you can hear the opening track. I'm not sure if it's a European or Japanese version, but it opens up with United We Stand. And dude, it's heavy, and it's scary, and it's talking moment for moment what's happening in front of our eyes with 9/11.
Now, Rob's work with several shredders, most particularly Dennis Cameron of Angelica, Tony McAlpine on the Mars Project, Project, and yourself. Is there something about particular vocalists like Rob or Mike Vasira or Joe Lynn Turner that they gravitate towards flashy guitarists?
I think Rob did it probably because he had played with me first. I mean, I was in a band with him called Vice. He was doing Bruce Springsteen covers and Bon Jovi covers. You know, I brought the shred into his life. And as a matter of fact, it was me who basically, you know, had told other people about him for the Project Driver thing with Tony McAlpine in L.A. So I think he just felt like that was very important. I'd always have that guitar style with him because I was, you know, that's how he started with me. You know, that's basically, I think, why he's done that. It's the same thing, I guess, after Randy Rhoads. Why did Ozzy keep trying to get flashy guitar players?
So beyond Impellitteri, you also stepped into a rather odd, if very solid and entertaining project, which is Animetal USA, where you cover nothing but old anime theme songs, redone in a metal style with fellow Shred veterans Mike Vasira on vocals, Scott Travis, Eraser X, and Thrasher, Eric Priest on the drums, and veteran bassist Rudy Sarzo of Ozzy D on Whitesnake. And you guys are going the full cosplay route here. I mean, you got this old Kiss, EZO kind of makeup. You got the wild outfits. I mean, I think this is part of the contract because you're not the first Animal band in existence.
You've got it. Yeah, I was approached when we finished the Wicked Maiden tour. The last show we did was the Sweden Rock Festival, which was a blast. It was awesome. Black Sabbath and Journey and Dream Theater on the headlining stage. And we killed. It was great. We were so excited to get back to the studio and do the next record. Then I get a call by Sony Japan and the management of Animetal USA. And they managed like Nickelback and Steven Tyler at the time. And so basically said, hey, look, we put this band together. would you be interested in being the guitar player? And at first, I didn't know anything about it. I said, well, who's in the band? Who is it? I said, well, it's Scott Travis from Judas Priest, the drummer. Rudy Sarzo had played bass with Whitesnake and Ozzy. I said, guys, I know Rudy's my friend. I know him. Okay. And then Mike Vassero, who I didn't know a lot about Mike, but I remember hearing him in the band Loudness, liking him, thinking, wow, he's a really cool singer. Great, great singer. And I said, cool, yeah, I think I said I can make some time for this. It's a project side thing. Then then they tell me what we're doing and show me the image, and I'm like, whoa. You know. So they said this. There was a famous Japanese rock band in Japan that did covers of famous anime music, except they would turn it into metal by taking riffs of famous metal songs from like Black Sabbath, Ozzy, whatever, but they would sing these anime lyrics and melodies over this metal music, right?
Yep. Yep.
It was huge. Evidently sold millions of records. They said, we've always had a vision of doing like an American version of that. So we want to call it Animal USA. And at first I was like, oh, I don't know about this. The metal fans are going to kill us. They're going to hate this, you know? But then they said, look, this is fun. This will be like you do metal versions of this anime music. Chris, we want you to just shred, just rip on every solo. I was like, oh, well, that sounds fun. As a guitar player, why not? You know, it's like, you know, having a beautiful girl come up to you asking to have sex. Okay. You know, sorry, I shouldn't say that. I am married. Sorry. Wife's going to kill me, you know? So, you know what I mean? So basically, I went down to the studio and, you know, Scott Travis is there waiting and Rudy Sarzo. And I've known Rudy for years. We've been friends. And Rudy's like, Chris, this is such an honor. We should do this. I want you to do this with me. You know, I want me to be the lead guitarist. So like, cool, Rudy. So this is why. He goes, what they're doing is they're asking us to be like the ambassadors to anime. And anime is a huge, huge integral part of the Japanese culture. It's kind of like anime is not just cartoons. Anime is like they've got dark thematic porn. They've got everything. It's something part of their life to carry the kabuki makeup, all of that. That stuff that's happened long before bands like Kiss and Alice Cooper. But it's part of who they are. And he said, you know, what they're offering right now is something really, it's just an honor. It's a great way for us to thank the Japanese people for allowing us to have great careers in Japan. So I conceded. I said, you know, you're absolutely right. And I do like anime. I think it's really fun and cool. So we went and did the record, and I thought, great, it'll be a short project. We'll do the record. It'll be fun. We'll go do some, you know, some small venues or whatever. Well, I was wrong. The record goes to number one, and I don't mean number one on, like, a rock chart. I mean number one where we bump Adele, who Adele was the biggest artist all over the world, number one in the national charts. We knocked her down. We went to number one. We're doing TV shows, which would be the equivalent of, like, Good Morning America. Stuff like that, The View, you know, that kind of stuff. Even Rudy looked at me and goes, Chris, he goes, I've been over here with Ozzy, with Randy Rhoads. I've been here with Quiet Riot when our Mental Health record blew up. He goes, I've been here with Whitesnake and the big record. He goes, I've never been in anything that was embraced that has been this big. I'm like, dude, this is insane. You know, it was insanity. We're playing massive arenas. First show was Loud Park. You know, that was a festival thing. But it was interesting, too, because even that, we weren't sure how we were going to go over in Japan, right? We're kind of nervous. So we said, listen, they wanted us to play later in the bill. They had like bands like Whitesnake and, you know, what's the name? What's Fred Durst's band, the rapper?
Oh, Limp Bizkit, yeah.
Yeah, they were playing. Arch Enemy were playing. Yeah. And they want us to be, you know, one of the top bills. And we were like, no, if we do this, we want to be first. We want to be on first band on the festival. So they put us on first at 11:30 a.m. in the morning, right? 18,000 seat arena. So we're like, perfect. We're going to go out there. There'll probably be like, you know, 1,000 kids there because who wants to go to a show at 11:30 in the morning, yeah, right? Rudy and I walk up. When you're walking up on an arena stage, you know, you got these big, big staircases you climb, right? Metal stairs. We're walking up, yeah, and Rudy looks over at me and I look over at him and I'm like, I don't believe this. The arena's packed. 18,000 people.
Wow.
Screaming, waiting for us. We went out. It was just a blast. First show. And by the time we got done, you know, you do media and all the stuff the day after the show and all stuff. They said we were the best band of the whole thing. And, you know, here we are in this Kiss makeup, you know, doing this crazy stuff. And it was really fun, you know. But what I thought was going to be a 6-month little project took 3 years. Because then we immediately went back into another record and right back to number one, arena tour, all of that stuff.
So now you're working with ALR-based Frontiers Records, at least in terms of Europe and the U.S.
Yep.
So I imagine you've already noticed changes from the more specifically Japan-based promotion you've primarily worked with for the last few decades.
Well, yeah, of course. Now we're starting to come back,
And it's really been a pleasure to talk with everybody.
It's interesting with this band, you know, because there's such, like I probably said earlier, there's been such a misconception on this band, an identity crisis of who we are.
Right.
So it's really great to finally talk to what's left of the mass media. So it's great because talking with everybody, at least people, and I'm really happy that people are listening to the record with open ears, because that's really important first. You know, we want to make sure that people listen to the music so they understand what it is we're doing. It's not that it's different. I mean, in Japan, even as we speak right now, I'm on the cover of the biggest guitar magazine. We just did Burn magazine, which is still, especially in Europe and Japan, it's one of the biggest metal magazines, you know?
Yep.
And every review, every critic that we've spoken with or has reviewed the record, it's been amazing response. It's a little intimidating. You know, again, when you're hearing guys saying, my God, we think you made the best metal or rock record of 2015. You know, hear stuff like that, you're like, oh my God, it's a lot to live up to, you know?
And actually getting to Venom itself, I can see that you haven't lost that metaphysical orientation that we were talking about earlier, looking at the issues from a perspective of a bigger picture than just, you know, everyday politics or what have you. I mean, Empire of Lies, that taps right into that vibe. And then you have Jehovah, which is pretty out there.
Yeah. But, you know, but then you'll have, listen, like, you know, you get back to songs like Nightmare.
Right.
Or a haunting, darker metal song. You know, We Own the Night, my God. I mean, I really love We Own the Night, but I swear to God, I feel like we ripped off Whitesnake. Still a Night era with John Sykes and David Coverdale. Because that song, it might have a bigger production, a little bit more technical, but it sounds like that could have totally been on that record, you know?
I was going to say, We Own the Night has that, like, old school, that first album XYZ style riff that just screams LA glam metal. So
it could be that way, yeah. It reminds me of Dio and all of that.
Yep, you know, too.
I really love that song. But it's got power, and it totally fits in. You could put that easily up against Slayer. You know what I mean? And that's what's fun about it. That's where I think we got really lucky. With whatever's happening to us right now, it's very magical. I don't want to sound like I'm on crack or something, you know, with, man, the dude's out to lunch, you know, he's talking to people in thin air. But it really does. It feels very magical at the moment, like something big is happening to us right now.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, for those unfortunates who missed out on your career through the 90s, the whole album feels like a throwback to better days. I mean, you haven't lost touch with that style of songwriting construction here.
Well, you know, listen, that's part of embracing who we are. I started, like I said, you know, the band, I started the concept of this band at 15 years old. And we've gone through the late 80s, the 90s, 2000, 2010, and 2015. And because we're human beings that have lived through those eras, played music in those eras, all of that has affected us. So that was one of the rules on this record. You know, again, when we're writing, if the song is great, it makes a record. And I don't care if it sounds like it's 1987 or if it's 2015. A great song is a great song.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like you recognize and accept the fact that a lot of what you're doing here is very retro, considering Time Machine. That kind of spelled it out.
To me, to be honest, it reminds me of Iron Maiden, very much so. Trooper, that's really where I feel the riff sounds like.
And, you know, Nightmare in particular feels very Racer X, with Rob taking his vocals into that Jeff Martin territory.
Oh, yeah.
You're throwing down a Paul Gilbert-style sweet picking fill, high-speed lead. I think you're pushing it past 32nd notes there. So.
Triplets, no. You know, but listen, and I love Paul, by the way. I think Paul is an amazing player, and he's had an effect on me as well. You know, he's like in my age group, and it's hard because, you know, the real guitar players that really influenced me is definitely Al DeMille is the top, right? McLaughlin and Paco. But obviously there were guys of my own age. Certainly Yngwie had an effect on me. Paul Gilbert, absolutely. Vinnie Moore, Tony McAlpine. I'm sure Michelangelo Badio must have affected me some way. I like him a lot. He's a good player. I said earlier, John Sykes, great player. Really liked him a lot. John Norum. I mean, there's a million guitar players. Jeff Watson, who was a guitar player in Night Ranger, loved his technique.
I am giving you props just for saying Vinnie Moore. He was like my idol when I picked up the guitar.
Oh, absolutely.
Background on Time Odyssey.
Yeah, loved all those guitar players. Jason Becker, Marty Friedman, all those players. You know, I mean, I saw them, and believe me, you know, I appreciated what they did. So at some point, I guarantee they all rubbed off on me. And they're part of Kristen Pelletieri, whether they like it or not.
One thing I did notice about the album, though, is that it seems like you crunched the lead somewhat, like you've gone back to the days of 8-bar solos or something. I mean, you cram a hell of a lot of notes into such a short set of phrases, but even so, was this a deliberate self-imposed limitation? Because I'm sure I'm not the only one who'd love to hear you just let it rip for a bit after all that build-up in the song.
You know, honestly, I play the solo for the song. The first thing I do, and again, this is where it's really important to understand this, before, no matter how great a solo is, if you don't have a good composition to put it in, it's going to be garbage.
That's true.
You know, you're just going to be like, and I believe me, I've been guilty of this, where, you know, you get ridiculed as being a senseless wanker. You know, you're just playing fast and there's no purpose. What I've learned is that you can play fast, but it has to have a good melodic structure.
Yes.
And it has to have a beginning and an end that develops. and it has a climax, and it makes you feel great at the end of it. It makes the listener go, oh, my God, that's great. And it's got to fit into the song. So on all these songs, there are songs, you know, with longer solos, right? And there are solos that they're to the point. And that's basically what I tried to do, play for the song. So the first thing when I'm writing, it's always, is the riff great? If the riff's great, I try to develop the song. And then once I get through the, you know, the second chorus, it's time to have fun. It's time to rip a guitar solo.
Yep.
But it has to be at the right length. It's whatever the song is leading us to do is what I will do for the solo. If it says the solo needs to be 30 seconds, a half minute long, that's what it'll be. If it needs to be 15 seconds long, that's what it will be.
You actually touched on something there that I notice is lacking in a lot of today's younger guitar heroes, which is phrasing and the idea of building to something, you know, starting somewhere, building to a crescendo, and then bringing it out. Where you now it's kind of like, it's almost like a Slayer solo or something where it just kind of starts, goes straight through in the middle, and then just, that's it, you're back into the song. That is something that they didn't teach them nowadays, or the music that's out there now doesn't lend itself to, that sort of song construction and solo construction.
Well, I think a lot of kids now, I mean, especially kids that are playing fast and shredding and all that wonderful stuff, they're learning from YouTube. They're just watching solo stuff, but they don't listen to songs. And they forget the great people, the great composers, right? Like on this record for Venom, I was listening to a lot of Vivaldi, The Four Seasons, Mozart. Now, I don't want to sound like Yngwie because I know he says that as well, but so does Uli John Roth.
Yep.
But it's true, I was listening to a lot of classical music. And I even found Beethoven. He even did some shredding stuff. Listen to a song called Rage Over a Lost Penny. And dude's ripping, you know, the composition. I was listening to a lot of that, but no matter what I listened to, I always noticed those great classical composers always made the song first. And within that song, you may have all of this tremendous technical playing, but it has to fit the song. And so, yeah, I think a lot of kids miss that in this day and age.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that I always really loved about Van Halen. I mean, he's probably my biggest influence out of everybody from a rock perspective. That first Van Halen record, he does the same thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And sorry, that's egotistical. So I'm now saying I write great lyrics. I'm great, everybody. You know, right?
But, we all do it.
But it starts with that great riff. So that's what I try first. Then you develop into a song, and a singer's got to have it, and the band's got to play it. It's got to feel great, and then comes the magical solo.
Right.
You know, and that's where you work at it, and that's what come together. For me, I got really lucky with Venom. I mean, the solos I'm really thrilled with. I'm really having so much fun with these. I love them. And it's just, and a lot of these are one take, you know, live. So it's great feel. Nice. I mean, this whole record for the most part was tracked live. You know, now we did go back in and absolutely, you know, have to thicken things up, or I might have had to have a double guitar, put stuff under a solo, you know. But I mean, for the most part, this is live performance, and it really, you can hear it in the record.
There's a certain kind of magic to that when you are doing a live track and it just, okay, that's it, we hit it. And, you know, if there's a mistake here or there, maybe you can butter it up, you know, do what you got to do, sweeten it in the mix. But as opposed to this sort of, you know, going through Pro Tools, click track, and we put this piece here, cut that piece there. Yes, it makes song construction, but you don't get that same feel. So
Yeah.
So do you have anything you want to plug or tour info you want to share?
Well, you know, I mean, the only thing I can say right now is that the band, I mean, as I said earlier, I hope we are starting, we are going to tour. We're starting in Tokyo. I think I said that, did I not?
I don't remember you saying that one.
All right. Sorry, that's probably 20 minutes before your interview. All right. So yeah, we are touring. First dates, Japan always first, right? So we're doing Tokyo, Japan, May 28th. We're doing On Air East Arena. We then follow in Osaka. We do, I forget what venue, Quattro or something like that. Then we go to Hiroshima. And as of yesterday, Frontiers offered us to be one of the top billing bands. They're going to do a major rock festival in Germany on October 3rd and October 4th. So I think we're going to agree to do that. And we're talking with agents and promoters right now to do a full-blown European tour. And in America, you know, we're talking with agents and we're trying to do, like, for us it's difficult, you know, because we're a bit spoiled. We go to Japan, we're an arena band, you know.
Right.
Here in America, the promoters we're talking to and the agents, they're terrified. They don't, including us, we don't know what to expect. Are we going to be able to fill up a 3,000 or 5,000 seat theater? Or are we going to go out, walk out on stage, and there's going to be three people sitting there?
Exactly. It's almost like starting over.
Exactly. So we don't know. And so the agents, they're scared because, you know, the reality is the production that we bring. If you've ever seen our stage set, it's pretty massive. And to bring that, it takes a lot of money up front, guarantees and all of that. So I think, you know, right now they're trying to figure out, what do we do with us? And I'm hoping they end up packaging us. You know, even with Frontier, you know, we're now on a label where our label mates are like Whitesnake. I'm telling the owner, dude, why don't you just package us, do a double bill with Whitesnake and Impellitteri? And of course, now listen, I get it. Whitesnake have sold a lot more records. So they're probably looking at us like, who the fuck are you? You know?
Right.
But you know what I mean? I mean, so basically, and forgive my language, but, you know, yeah, basically, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, we should pair up with a big band in the States and go do a run. Right. You know, maybe another metal band, like an Arch Enemy or something like that, Nightwish or whatever. That would be really cool.
So did you want to point the listeners to your website or a Facebook page?
So you're going to laugh at this. Sure. I mean, we really don't have a digital page right now. We took everything down. No, listen, seriously, we took it down for a reason. We had a fan club, and what we thought is, you know what? Every band out there is self-promoting. Everybody self-promotes themselves. The Kardashians, for God's sake, self-promote themselves. Yeah. We truly want to be a band of the people. If you love us, then hopefully you'll spread our music to everybody. Share it with your friends. Share it on your blogs, whatever, right? If you hate us, you'll slam us and you'll do it, and you'll do it openly, and that's cool too. And that way we know as we get bigger, it's done by the people. People like us because it's spreading through word of mouth, not because we're sitting there, hey, major, major news alert, here we are, you know, that kind of thing. Now, I have a Facebook page, just an open page. You know, I'm sure I'm going to have to turn it into a band page, you know, but basically just Chris Impellitteri, just Facebook me and, you know, I'm glad to have you on. And, you know, I'll tell you what's going on with the band if anything comes up immediately.
Well, with that, Chris, I'd like to thank you for joining me here on Third SM and hope to have you back again to discuss your next album.
Hey, thank you so much, and thank you very much for helping us spread the word.
All right, so that's it.
But, hey, listen, I really enjoyed speaking with you. You are a very smart guy. Seriously, I mean, it's funny. Your questions are very – you've got a lot of depth there. If you don't realize this, I am a shredder, but I'm also – I have an MBA. I'm pretty well-educated, you know. And, you know, I'm always fascinated how people, you know, they – perceive us, or are they really listening? And, you know, because I can hear always in the questions, and you're fantastic.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Much appreciated.
You're very well versed, so it's awesome. It's really a pleasure to speak with you, and I'm being very sincere about that.
Well, I appreciate it, and it's a pleasure to speak with you as well.
All right, I'm off to Brazil now. Brazil's up next.
Have a good trip.
All right, thanks. Talk to you soon.
So long. Bye. And to close out our chat with Chris, here's one more from Impellitteri, where he taps into the Racer X mod. This is Nightmare. Wow!
Facebook page or anything for you, Chris and Paul Terry. Stay tuned to thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com. Show us. If you'd like to contact us here, comment, questions, or phone makes a decision about the best option, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com. Visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com. Or Facebook page, please check out the best option.
Part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for links to the shows in question. All Block Talk radio shows are available for archive listen or download at your convenience.